What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Most of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to the Pomp Podcast, simply the best podcast out there. Now let's kick this thing off.
Will Clemente is a finance major at East Carolina University. He has quickly become one of my favorite writers on all things Bitcoin, including deep dives on various on-chain analytics. You can subscribe to Will's new email newsletter in the link in the description. In this conversation, we discuss this week's price sell-off, the on-chain metrics, who is selling, who is buying, and much, much more. I really enjoyed this episode with Will. We did it live on YouTube, and I hope you enjoy it as well. Before we get into this episode, though, I want to quickly talk about our sponsors. First up are my friends over at Revolut. Let's go back to the basics for a second. I've partnered with Revolut, a finance app in the United States and the UK that say they're the simplest way to access crypto. They are putting their money where their mouth is. You can sign up and make 3 card transactions and get $15. Yep, that's right, $15. What can you do with $15? You can exchange for Bitcoin at any of the other tokens Revolut supports. Yep, they are crypto enabled. These guys have made it easier to get some skin in the game. And as usual, when you move your money from fiat to crypto, your capital's at risk. But sign up now through Revolut.com/pomp to get a $15 reward and put them to the test. You can see the terms and conditions for details. Revolut's a financial technology company. Banking services are provided by Metropolitan Commercial Bank, a member of the FDIC, and the cryptocurrency services provided directly by Paxos Trust Company. Go check out Revolut at Revolut.com/pomp and let me know what you think. Next up are my friends over at Remote. When you use Remote, you can employ people in other countries legally and easily. They take care of international payroll, employee benefits, tax headaches, and all the paperwork for local compliance. Forget about location and hire the best person for every open role using Remote. Remote's platform is easy to use for full-time employees, contractors, and your HR team. Whether you're a major corporation or a small startup, Remote has the tools and resources to help you at a price that you can afford. Even better, listeners get a special deal. Sign up for Remote today and receive 50% off your first employee for the first 3 months. Check out remote.com/pomp and enter promo code POMP to get started. Again, remote.com/pomp and enter promo code POMP to get started. Remote makes it dead simple to employ people around the world. Go check them out at remote.com/pomp and enter promo code POMP. All right, let's get in this episode with Will. I hope you enjoy this one.
Anthony Pompliano runs Pomp Investments. All views of him and the guests on his podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Pomp Investments. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp or his guests as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his personal opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
Hello, everyone. We'll wait a minute here as everyone gets in and get started. Will, how you doing, man?
Chilling. It's been a crazy week in Bitcoin, but hanging in there. Spent a lot of time staring at charts this week, a little more than usual, but doing well. How about yourself, man?
I've got no complaints at all. Normally, we've got a pretty good setup, but I am traveling. I'm in New York City, so we're going to do it this way and stream it live. Hopefully people like that. Let's just jump right into what happened. So obviously you have spent pretty much the entire week looking at the on-chain metrics, and it feels like there's some high-level takeaways. Maybe let's just start there. Like, what at a high level happened this week when Bitcoin's price crashed?
Yeah, so like if we just want to get, you know, the gist of the kind of TLDR of what happened, you know, I think the major points are before the, you know, before we had this dump, we started to see exchange flows flip kind of bearish. You know, throughout the entire bull market, we've seen coins continually, you know, moving off exchanges. That's been a big narrative that has kind of been driving this cycle. But in the days before the dump, especially the day before the dump, we saw coins move onto exchanges at like unprecedented levels for this bull market. In fact, like the day before the dump, we had the all-time high of coins moving onto Binance ever, like in the history of Glassnode's data recording the exchange flow. So there was like a swath of coins that kind of moved onto exchanges, presumably to sell, right? I think, you know, a lot of times we assume that coins moving onto exchanges is only selling. It can also be things like, you know, people posting collateral, or people, you know, on Binance depositing coins to use derivatives on Binance. But a fair portion of that, it's safe to say, is being sold. So we saw, you know, those flows kind of switch around in the days before, especially the day before Wednesday. On Tuesday, we started to see those coins come on exchanges. Another key takeaway is that coins that were sold were younger, which is a good thing, because when you see, you know, at cycle tops, it's usually the long-term holders that are kind of dumping over at the top and selling it to strength as retail kind of comes in. But what we saw were young coins, specifically whales. So it seemed like perhaps funds that had gotten in and call it the like 10 to 20K band, the coins that were sold were, and when you look at the age of them, that kind of lines up with where that kind of 10 to 20K band was. And then there were a fair amount that were sold, you know, that had been bought recently, probably, you know, in around that $55K to $60,000 range. But there were a fair amount that were sold at a loss, which we can get into. The big sudden price drop that we saw, especially that last big wick down to about, you know, whatever it was, 30K, got up to the high 20s on some exchanges. That was really driven by the liquidations, which we'll get into as well. But when you see that big drop, that big sudden drop, a lot of times what that is it's this cascade of liquidations, which is what happened Wednesday. A lot of leverage has been wiped out now. We'll get into that as well. But futures open interest is way down from where it was at the beginning of the week, which is a good thing in terms of the leverage doesn't have, the leverage traders don't have as much impact on the price as spot does, which is generally good to see. I'm sure the leverage will come back, but for now it's been wiped out. Like one way to look at it is the funding rates. But the funding rates have been negative since Wednesday. So it's showing the traders are not looking to go long right now, and funding is pretty much dead. And then the coins that are being sold now, you know, I think it's just going to take a while for the coins to kind of sift into new hands that are not going to sell. That process of kind of reaccumulation, if you will, is going to take a little bit of time for sure.
Yeah. And then one of the things that really kind of in your analysis that to me was super interesting was this idea of the energy value. And I know that this is part of the whole idea of like the bull market still being intact, but maybe explain a little bit about this energy value and what exactly that is, how it works, and why it's important.
Yeah, so this was a model created by Charles Edwards, who he's famous for creating like the hash ribbons, and then he's also created this energy value based on you know, the hashing going into Bitcoin. To be honest, I don't know the exact calculation that goes into creating it, but it's based off of the energy input that's going into Bitcoin, which is correlated with the hash power going up. So it was interesting. We touched this energy value that Charles Edwards has created for the first time ever in a bull market. And so he posted something and he said, this is the generational opportunity to buy Bitcoin, the best big opportunity to buy in a bull market, because we touched this energy price that I think if he was saying if we had broken that, then he would have kind of flipped a little more bearish. But the fact that we bounced off of that, he, in his opinion, shows that we're still in this bull market.
Got it. And then when you talk about the kind of age of coins and the funding rates, I think that we've covered that in past videos, so I don't want to spend a ton of time on that.
Sure.
But I do think that the liquidations, I think it was over $300 million in liquidations happened within like 10 minutes. And that really drove that kind of deep price, you know, kind of drop. Talk a little bit about that. Is that a big number, or have we seen that before?
Yeah, so, you know, what led to that was we saw 59,313 coins moved onto exchanges within 4 days. And then so that spot selling obviously starts to push the price down. And then traders all have stop losses set. So if I'm taking an entry into Bitcoin, I'm a trader at whatever, I'm just making up a number here, 50,000. I set my stop loss at 48,000. So that's basically a risk mechanism where if Bitcoin falls below that, especially if I'm using leverage, I want to have a tight stop loss so that if the trade goes against where I think it's going to go, that I don't lose a lot of my position. So what happens is when spot starts pushing the price down, especially below a kind of a key liquidation price that's recognized by the broader market, you start to get this cascade effect where a lot of traders' stop losses or liquidation prices are hit, and then they have to sell. They're forced sellers, and then that cascades the price even further down. So what we saw was, you know, we had that spot selling that was driving the price down. But as we were going down, the leveraged traders kept trying to step in and long every single time they thought it was the bottom, the whole way down. So, you know, obviously in previous videos, I've been talking about how I've been, you know, bullish, and just kind of describing this bullish setup, which, you know, I still think holds true in the mid to longer term. Obviously, I've miscalculated the short term price action a little bit. But, you know, I think it did become obvious, though, that we were going to keep going down once this began, because what happened was every time the price dropped down, leverage traders stepped in and tried to go, you know, whatever, trying to go 20x the bottom, and they thought they were going to ride the thing the way up. As they're like, okay, this is the absolute bottom, I'm going to go super long leverage here. It kept happening, and so I was like, we're going to need some kind of big flush. And Wednesday morning we got that. We got, you know, it was over 300. I think it was $303 million of long liquidations within a 10-minute period, and the market can't sustain that kind of selling, especially when it's very fragile like it was on Wednesday. So that was what caused that big nasty wick that we saw down to 30K or whatever it was, 28K on some exchanges.
Got it. And then in the letter that you wrote yesterday, you talked a lot about like the first real capitulations for the first time since March 2020. And you even talked about kind of SOPRA and it dipping below one. Maybe talk a little bit about those on-chain metrics and kind of why you think that was kind of true capitulation that we saw earlier this week.
Yeah, so Glassnode has this metric called NUPL, which is called Net Unrealized Profit Loss. And so the way you can kind of think of this is like, when we get to the top of the bull market, people stop taking profits because people think the thing's going to the moon, and they're like, all right, I'm not going to sell because this thing, it's done 1,000%, it's going to do another 1,000%, and people get very complacent and stop taking profits. And so this metric, NUPL, it kind of, it has these different zones where it kind of identifies the market behavior based off of whether people are taking profits or not. And so you have these different zones. There's capitulation, hope and fear, optimism, anxiety, belief, denial, and euphoria and greed. And so we got up near, and there's a longer term NUPL and then the shorter term MUPL. And the longer term one, we actually got near kind of that euphoria greed in call it, you know, mid February, when we were really on a tear, when we went from like 30K to 40K in like a week or whatever it was, 10 days. But now on the shorter term time frame, we're in kind of this deeper capitulation that we kind of dove into on Wednesday, which meant that, you know, people were kind of panicking and then they're starting to sell a lot more than they have at any other time in the bull market. And SOPR is similar in the sense that SOPR looks at, you know, the behavior of buyers and sellers on any given day, and it determines, okay, what is the aggregate profit of the coins on those days. And so for the first time, like I've described SOPR in some of the previous letters on very short timeframes, but SOPR just running a broader 7-day moving average, which is taking a little bit more of a zoomed out view for the broader bull market, we actually dipped below that SOPR level on Wednesday, which was the first time we had dipped below SOPR on a broader 7-day moving average since September. I think you remember when we had that that fairly big crash was like 20-25% towards, I think it was like mid-September, late September, when we were start kind of, you know, getting the bull run kicked off there. But it was the first time we had a solid breakthrough that loss threshold since then. So yeah, the market's definitely underwater. When you also look at the realized cap, is another way to kind of look at this. So we've talked about this before, the realized cap is the market capitalization based off of, it's the capitalization based off of when the coins move last. So when coins, let's say, you know, someone bought at 100,000 and they never moved the coins. Well, yeah, those 100,000 coins are worth whatever if they bought them at a dollar, now they're worth $3.8 billion, right? But the only $100,000 would be added to realized cap, because that was when the coins were moved last. And so we actually saw realized cap go down throughout the dip, which means the following. So if we had seen it go up, that would mean that the coins that were selling were last moved at lower prices. But since we saw realized cap go down, it means that the coins that were being sold had last moved at higher prices. So for example, if a coin was, you know, last moved at 64K and now the coin sold at 40,000. Well, all of a sudden, $24,000 was removed from realized cap because the coin was last moved at 64K and then now it just moved at 40K. So I think that shows that the market was realizing losses pretty heavily on Wednesday, and it appears to be people that had gotten in and, you know, in the last week to month, we saw a lot of selling coming from that cohort of coins, probably people that had, you know, just kind of speculatively got in the last month or so.
Yeah. And it feels like as we saw those young coins sell off, we also saw some movement in whales as well. One of the things that you highlighted is the OTC desk outflows and why that spiked. Maybe talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, you know, for high net worth individuals and institutions, they're not going through exchanges. A lot of them are going through OTC desks. And so, you know, when you see spikes in that kind of, to me at least, illustrates that those high net worth individuals and institutions are buying. And on Wednesday, we saw this huge spike in OTC outflows, which was a good sign. You saw those institutions come in and buying the dip. You know, on a similar note, I think this is interesting to note. When we were kind of bouncing off the bottom, off that 30K bottom, it seemed like a lot of the buying was coming from the U.S. Because Coinbase, that's the exchange that the U.S. mainly goes through, and then Binance is mainly Asia, Bifinex, OKX. Those are more Asian based exchanges. But throughout, when we bounced up, Coinbase was trading at like a $3,000 premium to the other exchanges, which means that whoever was on Coinbase was absolutely smashing the green button. and I think that goes to show that there's a lot of U.S. demand around those levels.
And so when you start to look at stablecoin flows, I think that's another thing that you highlighted, in just the importance of kind of how much capital is flowing in the system, either buying or ready to buy.
Yeah. So, you know, following the dip, we saw a fair amount of Tether moved onto exchanges. In the first hour after the dip, we saw over $500 million of Tether moved onto exchanges. And, you know, if you just look and zoom out at kind of the net flow day to day, you know, after the dip, we've seen this big kind of, if you will, dense cluster of inflows, of daily inflows. The biggest spike, I think, was around when Elon Musk bought it, like the beginning of February, the biggest single day spike. But we're seeing continued inflows day after day since that dip. So I think that's interesting. You know, when you look at stable coins, a lot of times that can help you kind of get a gauge of, yeah, maybe that capital isn't buying right now, but yeah, it's sitting on the exchanges and it's kind of waiting to be deployed. So I think stablecoin flows are something you have to look at this cycle that weren't around in, you know, in 2017, obviously, because they didn't exist back then. So it's kind of a non-Bitcoin blockchain metric that I think is important to take a look at.
Got it. And then one of the things that's the most fascinating to me is this whole idea that the bull market's still intact, but there's a lot of data that suggests actually things were starting to heat up and it felt like, okay, we may be getting overheated. Now they're actually cooling off. So things like reserve risk, explain what that is and kind of why that's important.
Yeah, so reserve risk is another one of those kind of broader cycle metrics that you look at to kind of identify the bear zones where the market's kind of oversold, and then as well these overheated zones. So reserve risk is the calculation for it is price divided by HODL bank. So the way you could just think of this is that when price is low and confidence is high, that's when reserve risk is low. But when price is high and confidence from holders is low, that's when reserve risk goes up. And so then at the end of the bull market, price is high and confidence is very low. Price is very high, confidence is very low. So you get these overheated zones, usually over like 0.02 in terms of that of the reserve risk ratio. But what we're seeing now is, you know, we got up to kind of call it halfway of where we've gotten in terms of overheatedness compared to the previous cycles. And then now we're just in this cooling off period, which shows that price is going down, but confidence from the longer term holders isn't moving or is actually going up. So I think this is a good way to kind of show that, yeah, the bull market is, you know, we're cooling off here, but it's not over because we didn't reach that overheated euphoric zone.
And then what about MVRV?
Yeah, so MVRV is it's a very simple ratio of the market capitalization to the realized cap. And so it's another metric where, you know, you can identify these overheated zones. And then there's another kind of a subset off of this MVRV Z score, which basically adjusts it for volatility and gives these very distinct overheated zones. Neither of those have we hit any kind of overheated mark and what I'm looking at. And, you know, we're cooling off a lot on both of those. What that shows is, you know, the market cap is going down and the realized cap has gone up. I mean, I'm trending looking this over a 2 to 3 month period since, call it, you know, the end of January, beginning of February. And this has been trending down since then. So, you know, that's showing that we're just kind of in this cool off period. And once again, we haven't hit at least a historical overheated zone. So, yeah, I think that's just another metric. You know, there's like three or four of these. And I think the key takeaway here is, like, we haven't hit overheated zones on any of these yet. We're cooling off. So unless Bitcoin does something that it's never done before, the bull market isn't over based off of Bitcoin's historical action.
Got it. And then maybe the last thing is just talk about the volume distribution and then we'll let everyone go. But I think the volume distribution is really interesting, kind of comparing where we are today versus historical bull markets.
Yeah. So, you know, in each bull market, you see around like 2 to 3x the previous all-time high, this big base of capital kind of flowing. We see this big consolidation. And we started to see that, you know, call it around, let me say like mid-40s to call it 58K, especially between 54,000 to 58K. You saw a lot of coins moving hands. Over 25% of supply has moved above the 40K threshold. And what you see at bull market tops is you don't see a lot of distribution. So, you know, if you look in the newsletter, you see, I saw some comments that it looked the same. I mean, I suppose it looks the same in the kind of the pattern of it, but the actual density, the percentage of supply moved at each of those levels is not even comparable, because especially in that, you know, in that 54 to 60,000 range, we have a lot of distribution there, meaning, you know, a lot of coins, a lot of people bought in at those levels, a lot of new capital's flown in between that 40 to 60K band. So, you know, at the top, a lot of coins don't change hands. Whereas now we're kind of seeing the opposite in the zone that we're in. So the signature of that, in terms of the URPD, if that was the top, it would be kind of unprecedented as well. And also, you know, two other things, you know, the stock to flow deflection. I think this is very interesting. You know, a lot of people are calling the stock to flow model dead, but it's had a bigger deflection than it has before. This is like the third largest deflection it's had to the downside. So that, you know, that's one interesting thing to keep in mind. I think I'm a general proponent of the stock to flow. I don't follow it in terms of like the exact price, but in a general sense, I think there is a correlation there between, you know, the supply and price. So I think that'll be interesting to take a look at. And then also Willy Woo's NVT price, which I think it's only been broken for, you know, significant amount of time, not just like one daily close, one or two other times. I think once in 2017 and once in 2013. And we're very undervalued relative to that ratio, which is just like a very basic ratio of like the network, the market cap to the on-chain transactional volume. And so you can kind of think of that as like we're undervalued compared to the underlying investor activity that's going on the blockchain. So I think that's another thing I'm going to be keeping an eye on, because that model has served as a good pricing mechanism for Bitcoin throughout its history. So I think, you know, if Bitcoin goes into a bear market from here, it would be pretty, I think a lot of these models that we're all using would kind of be invalidated, which in my opinion, isn't going to happen because they've worked for all of Bitcoin's history. So it's something we're definitely going to have to keep an eye on over the next couple of weeks. But based off of the data and the historical, you know, action of these different indicators, I remain bullish. And I think we are still in that bull market. It's just going to take some time at this point for the coins that were kind of panic sold over the last week or so to kind of find their way into strong hands. But I would say, you know, kind of base case, expect consolidation over the next couple weeks or so. I mean, this is going to take some time now. I think this is we're still in consolidation, but it's putting a damper on how long that we may break out of the consolidation. It may be a while for that process to happen, but I still remain bullish.
Awesome. This is fantastic work. For those that are listening live or watching afterwards, I'm putting in the chat right now Will's new email. He's doing a fantastic job, so please go subscribe to that. And then every Friday he's going to be writing a guest post for the Pomp Letter, so make sure you're subscribed there. And then we're going to do these every Saturday. Sometimes they'll be live, sometimes they won't, but hopefully you guys are all learning from this. So Will, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. You're doing a great job, and hopefully people are enjoying it.
Thanks a lot, Pomp. You know, have a good weekend, man. And I'm looking forward to getting some Bitcoin pizza. You got to get that out to Raleigh.
I'm working on it.